This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Security forces in Myanmar deployed armored vehicles in major cities and cut internet access on Monday after protest over this month's coup and the detention of leader Aung San Suu Kyi drew hundreds of thousands on the streets. Suu Kyi's detention on charges of illegally importing 6 walkie-talkie radios is due to expire Monday. Police opened fire to disperse protesters at a power plant in northern Myanmar Sunday during a 9th day of demonstrations against the February 1st coup, which saw the detention of the leaders of Suu Kyi's ruling National League for Democracy. Shortly after midnight, residents in Myanmar reported an internet outage. They said all 4 telecommunications networks were inaccessible from the early hours of Monday morning. Western embassies from the European Union, the United Kingdom, Canada, and 11 other nations issued a statement late Sunday calling on security forces to refrain from violence against demonstrators and civilians who were protesting the overthrow of their legitimate government. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called on the ruling junta to make sure peaceful assembly is respected and demonstrators are not subjected to reprisals. Russian President Vladimir Putin accused Western powers of using jailed opposition figure Alexei Navalny to try to contain Russia, saying Russia's recent successes include the development of the Sputnik V coronavirus vaccine, and they're starting to irritate Moscow's opponents. His remarks came amid word that a series of videos of pro-Putin flash mobs, broadcast by state-controlled media and posted online, were staged. Independent media outlets in Russia, the governing United Russia Party, issued instructions for the videos to be recorded. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Heavy fighting between Houthi rebels and Yemeni government forces raged on, extending a week on violence in the strategic part of Marib, according to Yemeni officials. With dozens killed, the fighting has cast major doubt over UN-led efforts to restart negotiations to end years of civil war. The Iranian-backed rebels earlier this month renewed their attacks on the oil-rich province. It's an anti-Houthi stronghold held by the internationally recognized government. Yemen's war started in 2014 when the rebels seized the capital and much of the country's north. A Saudi-led U.S.-backed intervened and a month later to dislodge the Houthis and restore the internationally recognized government. The conflict has killed about 130,000 people and spawned the world's worst humanitarian disaster. The number of new U.S. coronavirus cases has fallen below 100,000 in recent days, but health officials continue to warn the pandemic is far from under control. The United States, with more reported COVID-19 deaths and more infections than any other country, have been recording more than 200,000 new cases a day in December, and the figure swelled to about 250,000 in January, according to Johns Hopkins University. On Friday and Saturday, however, the number of new cases dipped below 100,000 each day. Still, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said the latest figures, including 1,500 to 3,500 more deaths a day, are 2.5 times the figures the country was recording just last summer. The U.S. has recorded more than 27.6 million virus cases and more than 484,000 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins data. Rescuers pulled out 9 more bodies from the site of a flash flood in the Himalayan region of northern India Sunday, a week after the disaster struck, bringing the death toll to at least 50, with more than 150 people still missing. The flash flood, triggered by what scientists said could have been a large avalanche of glacier ice and water, rock, and debris surging down the river valley, destroying dams and bridges. Rescuers are using heavy digging machinery in a race to free dozens of dam construction workers trapped in an underground tunnel connected to a hydroelectric project being built by the government-owned National Thermal Power Corporation. There is more at voanews.com. Again, that is voanews.com via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Monday, February 15, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Guinea confirms a new Ebola outbreak near its border with Liberia.
The government has confirmed that there is some Ebola cases that have been identified in the southeast region of Guinea in the city of Nzérékoré. So far, we have identified 7 cases, and among those 7 cases, 3 are already died.
Liberia goes on high alert to avoid an Ebola repeat of 2014. Somali political leaders are at odds on election schedule. Lesotho's health ministry comments on ongoing health workers' strike and widening division between Kenya's president and his deputy.
Yeah, we are either together or we are apart, but you cannot come and take credit and then at the same time insult those you are together with.
And Africa's oldest leader celebrates 88th birthday. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The government of Guinea has confirmed a new Ebola outbreak in the city of Nzérékoré near its border with Liberia. Nzérékoré was the ground zero of the 2014 Ebola outbreak in West Africa that killed more than 11,000 people. Guinea's Information Minister Amara Sompare says 3 people have already died from the 7 confirmed cases.
The government has confirmed today by a statement that there is some Ebola cases that have been identified in the southeast region of Guinea in the city of Nzérékoré. And so far, we have identified 7 cases, all more than 25 years old. And it is 4 men and 3 women. And among those 7 cases, 3 are already died.
So what is the Guinean government doing now about this news?
The government, through the Minister of Health, has organized an emergency meeting today with all the technical partners of Guinea to take a certain number of measures in terms of controlling the spreads of the epidemic. So they have decided to isolate all the suspect cases in the Nzérékoré CTP to investigate on the cases to make sure that we don't have any other suspect case. And we need to identify also all the contact people. They have already sent an investigation mission in Nzérékoré, in Gweke, and we have already put in place a kind of a coordination committee with all the technical partners and the World Health Organization.
I'm sure the Guinean government is quite aware about this same region. I think it's Nzérékoré. This is the same area where the 2013 Ebola broke out. What is going on there?
It is difficult to say it right now. As I explained to you, there is a mission, an investigation mission that is already on its way to try to understand what is going on over there. And you're right, the area, the Nzérékoré city, the Nzérékoré region is very near to the Gekedu region, where the last Ebola epidemic took its place in Guinea. So let's wait until this mission come back with conclusions.
The Liberian Ministry of Health, or the Liberian government, President George Weah, has given a mandate to health authorities there to be on heightened alert about the situation in Nzérékoré.
I mean, it's a normal decision from our neighbor, because, you know, in Africa, people move all over the border because they have a lot of cultural and social activity together. So it is normal from the Liberian government to urge their medical staff and all the health system in Liberia to be ready in case of any suspect identified person in the Liberian country.
Thank you very much again, Mr. Sompare. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you, James.
That was Amara Sompare, Guinea's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Liberian President George Weah has told his country's health authorities to increase epidemic surveillance and preventive activities in the wake of the reported new Ebola outbreak in Guinea. Chief Medical Officer Dr. Francis Carte says President Weah wants to make sure that Liberia is acting proactively to avoid an epidemic crisis such as the Ebola outbreak of 2014.
James, thank you so much. I think one of the things that have happened is the fact that we are going through COVID and Ebola is not strange to us. So upon hearing the information, the minister alerted the president, informed the president of what was going on. And based on that, the team immediately began to look at all of the system that we have in place. Since there's no case in Liberia, basically the National Public Health Institute is going to look at the surveillance system along the border. And then when we have a case, if we were to have a case, then the ministry response team will come in. But we are dusting up the papers. We are working with the various county health officers along the border, and we are basically putting our surveillance system in place.
Does it mean Liberia is considering closing its borders with Guinea?
Not really, James. The thing here is that the border between Liberia and Guinea is a porous border. So there is no way to say you are shutting down the border. And if we were to do that, it is going to negate the fact that we may have people coming through the bypasses, and it's going to make it difficult for us. So we are going to look at what is happening along the borderline, keep the border open, put our monitoring system in place. When we fought Ebola, it took the community to help us in defeating Ebola. So we're going to put back in place the community structures along the border, and that will help us in making sure that if we were to have anyone that comes in with a sign of symptoms, we can quickly pick up that person, begin contact tracing, and put a necessary system in place. So no, we do not intend to shut down the borders now.
If I remember clearly, this area of Guinea is where it was believed that the 2014 Ebola case might have originated. In case this comes to be very serious, what do you think the lessons that Liberia learned from 2014 that can be applied?
Thank you so much, James. And I think one of the best things that we have done is that based on the experience from 2014, Liberia has always been on the alert. And so even with COVID, we were able to deploy some of the strategies that were used during 2014 that have helped Liberia to maintain our COVID rate in this country. So basically, the fact that we have still some of the experts that dealt with the Ebola cases, the community structure is still in place, and everything else is in place. What we are doing now is making sure that we put those systems in place and monitor our border communities. There is an interaction now between, like, for example, the Nimba County area, because this case is from the Jericho. The first case that we had came from the Gekedu area. It's not too far, but it's the same area. So basically, we are doing everything we can to make sure that the borders are safe, surveillance system is increased, and if we were to have any case, definitely Liberia is prepared to make sure that we diagnose that case and begin all of the management that we can put in place to contain a spread in this country.
Thank you so much, Dr. Carter. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you so much, James, and look forward to talking to you again.
Dr. Francis Carter is Liberia's chief medical officer. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Members of Somalia's opposition group say they will hold a peaceful protest later this week against President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo's government over delayed elections. Mohamed Kahir reports from Mogadishu.
The coalition of Somalia's opposition presidential candidates announced the protest against the leadership of President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo. The president, who is known by his nickname Farmajo, has been seeking a second four-year term, but the parliament has ruled out an extension. Farmajo's term ended last week without a clear plan on presidential and parliamentary elections. His government and the state leaders have failed to make a headway on the issue. Speaking during a press briefing in the capital, Mogadishu, the chairman of the opposition presidential candidate, Sheikh Sharif Sheikh Ahmed, said the peaceful demonstration is as a result of the government's failure to conduct elections on stipulated time. He says the opposition political parties resolved to conduct a peaceful demonstration this Friday against the federal government's failure to conduct transparent polls, improve security and political stability in the Horn of African nation. Former President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud, who is among those eyeing the top office, called on the international partners, including the United States, to help Somalia towards the realization of peaceful democratic state. Mahmoud says they expect the international community to be part of the solution and not the problem through engaging the leaders who complicate the ongoing impasse among the Somali political stakeholders. As the dispute continues, civil society groups are urging the leaders to avoid actions that escalate already tense political environment. Hassan Modane is the associate director of Horn Institute for Peace and Development. Hassan Modane says it is very clear President Farmaajo's government failed to conduct the polls on time, but it's also responsible on the opposition side to call for a protest amid the surge of COVID-19 cases in the country. He says there's also a risk of increased explosive attacks in the capital, Mogadishu. The international community urged Somali leaders to avoid unilateral actions and proceed quickly to agree on implementing September 2020 electoral deal, which will allow 101 delegates to select members of parliament. They will in turn choose the next head of state. Farmaajo has accused the opposition leaders of backing out of the deal. Hamid Kaye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, February 15th. The divide between Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and his deputy William Ruto appears to be growing by the day. Last week, President Kenyatta publicly asked his deputy to consider resigning from office instead of criticizing the government from within. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, Deputy President Ruto has responded saying he will not resign because he's performing his duties as guaranteed under the Kenyan constitution.
Speaking last week, President Kenyatta accused Deputy President Ruto of absconding his duties and instead focusing on campaigning for the 2022 presidential contest. President Kenyatta also accused Ruto of continually criticizing the government while at the same time highlighting its successful projects in his campaigns. In another rebuke over the weekend, a visibly angered President Kenyatta lashed out at his deputy for criticizing the Building Bridges initiative that seeks to amend the country's constitution. He says, there's no need to incite Kenyans to fight amongst themselves. On one hand, you're saying the government has failed. On the other hand, you're saying we as a government has done this and that development. How many governments are there? There's only one government, and you must embrace all the goods and bads. It is either that or you resign and let those willing to do the job continue. He adds,
yeah, we are either together or we are apart, but you cannot come and take credit and then at the same time insult those you are together with.
Deputy President William Ruto over the weekend dismissed President Kenyatta's call for his resignation. He said most of his duties as deputy president have been reassigned to Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i. However, Ruto says he's not in any competition with President Kenyatta and will continue to respect the president and his decisions.
There is no contest between me and my boss, and I respect the decision of the president. And the president calls the shots. He is in charge. And I have not countermanded any decision. And I will continue to work as deputy president of the Republic of Kenya because that is my place in the constitution.
Kenyan political commentator Michael Agwanda explains what he thinks may have caused the row between President Kenyatta and his deputy.
The row between President Uhuru Kenyatta and the Deputy President, Dr. William Somaya Ruto, is now in the public domain. This began as a result of the party wrangles that began as soon as our 2017 election was over. And it has escalated to a point where basically the Deputy President is not attending government functions, and now it is having a lot of negative words coming from the president, and we are seeing the deputy president taking a very firm ground to respond.
Garissa Member of Parliament, Aden Duale, is calling for reconciliation. He says the deteriorating relations between the two and their allies by extension has become a major concern, and he fears the escalation could destabilize the government and threaten the unity of the country ahead of the 2022 polls.
It's very unfortunate. It's very sad if today you as the leaders of this country are causing a lot of division within our party the last 2 years, until that division is affecting the running of government, the running of our country, the stability of the, of political parties.
President Kenyatta may want his deputy to resign, but analysts say he cannot fire Ruto because the 2010 constitution allows for a joint leadership comprising the president and his deputy, who are elected as one unit. Hence, the only way the deputy can be removed is by him stepping down or through an impeachment. Some opposition members of parliament made attempts recently to bring impeachment motion against Deputy President Ruto, but it did not go far. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
A spokesperson for Lesotho's health ministry says the government is concerned about ongoing health workers' strike. Nurses at Queen Mamo Hato Memorial Hospital, also known as Sepong, have been on strike for 2 weeks because they say they are being paid less than their counterparts at government-owned health institutions in violation of the so-called public-private partnership agreement. Mpansa Pamaletwela is director of human resources at the Lesotho Ministry of Health.
The government of Lesotho is deeply concerned about the ongoing strike at Queen Mamo Hato Memorial Hospital because the strike defeats the purpose of Queen Mamo Hato Memorial Hospital's existence, which is intended to deliver the health services to Basotho and the health services at a tertiary level.
The workers also say or claim that employees at Sepong are treating COVID-19 patients, work that they say other government clinics are not able to do, but yet they are paid less.
As far as Sepong has or is paying the workers, the amount of salaries lower than that of the government employees, yes, it is violating the agreement. So the agreement is not violated by the government of Lesotho because the government of Lesotho is not paying the salaries of the Tsepong staff. Remember, these are the Tsepong or Queen Mamo Hato Memorial Hospital employees. They are not the government of Lesotho employees. But Queen Mamo Hato Memorial Hospital or Tsepong, as the operator of that hospital, is obliged, as per the agreement, not to make the workers worse off compared to the workers in the government sector. So as far as Tsepong pays them lower than what the government offers to its employees, then it is violating the PPP agreement.
Do you think this is a dispute that should be handled by Lesotho's labor court?
Let me say to you, James, you know, any labor dispute, if not resolved internally between the employees and the employer, it could always be referred to the Directorate of Dispute Resolution, which is the DDPR. It could always be referred there. So from there, all the necessary steps until it reaches to the labor court could be taken. So if the employees are having a desire to do that, they have the opportunity or they have the chances to push up to the level of the labor court. In fact, this is a dispute between the Tsepong Pty Ltd. and its employees. The government is only coming into the picture, intervening or trying to intervene because it is its concern that the services are rendered at Tsepong.
Mpansa Pamaletwela is Director of Human Resources at the Lesotho Ministry of Health. She was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. Africa's oldest and second longest serving leader, Cameroonian President Paul Biya, celebrated his 88th birthday February 13. Ceremonies were organized in Cameroon's major towns with loyal government ministers and young people pledging their support, while those opposed to his 50-year rule demanded that the octogenarian hand over power. As Moki Edwin Kizika reports from Yaounde, Biya is blamed by some for the several crises his country is facing. But his supporters say he is a God-sent leader.
Thousands of youths at the Yaounde Multipurpose Sports Complex sing an anniversary song wishing 88-year-old Cameroonian President Paul Biya long life and good health. The young people said they were invited for the anniversary celebration by Cameroon's government. Among them is 28-year-old Fatimatu Iyawa, president of the Cameroon National Youth Council. She says BIA works tirelessly to improve Cameroon.
We are here to wish him a happy birthday because it is not everybody who is lucky to have his age. He's our patriarch, he's an example, he's a role model for the Cameroonian young people. We have modern sport infrastructures that he put at the disposal of the Cameroonian young people. There are schools, universities with modern equipment that he put at the disposal of the Cameroonian young people.
24-year-old Ernestine Makoke, another member of the Youth Council, says she does not see any reason to celebrate Bia's 88th birthday. She says it is unhealthy for a man at an advanced age to hang on to power.
He's been too long in power since 1982. We've had just one president. Look at the country like America. From 1982 to 2021, they've had 7 presidents. In my country, for the sake of democracy, governance, accountability, peace, and nation building, I would have preferred that at least we have a second president, at least for a change.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with mixed martial arts, where undisputed welterweight champion Nigerian-American Kamaru Usman cemented his position at the top of the 170-pound division by beating top contender Gilbert Burns at the UFC 258 in Las Vegas. Kamaru Usman, who is popularly known as the Nigerian Nightmare, stopped Gilbert Burns with punches 34 seconds into the third round, taking his record to 18-1, defending his title for the third time and breaking Georges St-Pierre's consecutive welterweight victories record in the process. The two rivals were formerly teammates at Florida gym Sanford. After the results was announced, the pair shared an embrace in the middle of the octagon, with Burns in tears and Usman appearing to fight off emotions of his own.
Every day we work, and my coach says it to me all the time, be present in there, you know, and I tried to be present in there today. This one was very, very hard for me today, but, you know, I just tried to stay present, and the results and all the accolades are just going to pile up over time.
Usman now owns the longest winning streak in UFC welterweight history with a victory over Burns on Saturday. And on to athletics, where Kenyan long-distance runner, who specializes in the 3,000-meter steeplechase, Beatrice Chepkoech, now owns 2 world records. On Sunday, the Kenyan distance runner, who set the world record in the steeplechase in 2018, broke the women's world record in the 5,000 at the Monaco Run by completing the road race in 14 minutes, 43 seconds. Pending ratification, the victory improves on the previous 14 minutes, 48 seconds record set by Caroline Kipkuri in a mixed gender race, and the women's only record of 14 minutes, 44 seconds set by Sifan Hassan in 2019.
I'm so happy because I didn't expect. I was just doing it. It was so good, even though there was a lot of wounds. I tried with a lot to follow my pacemaker, and then everything was so perfect.
In the men's category, Ugandan's Joshua Cheptegei, the 10,000 meters world champion on the track, won the men's race in 13 minutes, 14 seconds. He set the men's 5,000 kilometer record of 12 minutes, 51 seconds in Monaco last year.
It was really a good race, but the win was incredibly difficult to break. I just knew that I have to, you know, run the best way I used to always run. And I didn't want something to distract me, especially with the gloves. And, you know, something small can distract your motivation and your mindset. So I just wanted to just run and defend the title.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice day. And that's it for this Monday, February 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.